Welcome to Hype episode 106. We're back with another episode of Hypeable.com's podcast, all about the latest film and TV and movie and film and movie and cinema and theater news today. It's been a while. My name is Selena. We are back after a 2-week break because we did a little impromptu holiday. Sorry, everyone. It's all my fault. But we're back now to talk about the last 2 weeks in entertainment news. So it's going to be a fun, packed show today. I'm joined by Pam and Kristen and Marima today. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm so excited. Last time I talked about how I hadn't been on with, was it Kristen? I think we hadn't been on in ages.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks for me.
Yeah, for all of us. It's been a crazy summer. I'm excited to get back to a more regular schedule because I always feel like we miss out on so much when we miss a week. But as always, if you're listening to this, you can always find all the latest news on Hypeable.com to keep up with what is happening in the entertainment news, and that is at hypable.com. You can also find this show on Twitter, which is Hypeable Hype, and you can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com, and you can also email us all your thoughts on the show and the news and things you want us to talk about at hype@hypeable.com. And we have a couple of emails to get into later in the show that are both pretty great. Someone followed up on my request for embarrassing fandom dress-up stories, and I'm very excited to not be alone in that. So we'll get into that after everything else. The first thing we have, as always, is How We Hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom the past week. And I want to start with Marima, since she has, like, loads, because she hasn't been on in many weeks.
Yeah, my bad. Well, first, I've seen a couple of movies. So I saw Finding Dory last night, and I saw the BFG now a couple weeks ago. I really love the BFG. I think a lot of that has to do with kind of childhood nostalgia, and also John Williams does the score, so you can't get better than that. But it was very sweet and beautiful. And Finding Dory was, as if anyone hasn't seen this by now, but was really fun, except for there's this one bit with this, like, sea lions that made me vaguely uncomfortable. Just seemed kind of out of touch with the rest of the tone of the film, which was all about, like, yay, inclusion and stuff. And then there was a bit where they kind of bully another character. And at the end of the film, I looked at the person I went with and was like, did that just happen? Is that a thing? But I really liked it. It was fun. I can't really remember what happened in Nemo, so I could not possibly say if I liked it better than that or not. But, you know, it's good times. I like Pixar. And then the other thing this week, I wanted to give a shout out because we never do music. And I've been listening to this amazing album that just came out. The album is called Nothing's Real, and the artist is Shura, who's a British singer. And the album is this kind of like 80s synth pop sort of vibe. It just came out as we're recording this past week. And it's so, so good. It's so catchy. If you follow me on Twitter, you may have seen me like tweeting out some of the music videos because they're so cute and fun, and like the songs are just great. And you know, I think it's a good kind of summer soundtrack. Unfortunately, I'm going into winter, but hey, we can dream. So for those of you in the other hemisphere, you may enjoy it for sort of fun summer vibes.
That's cool. And speaking of music, Pam, you've seen a music-themed film that I've been really into. So tell us what you think about that.
Yeah, I have. And actually, it's funny that Marima mentions that we hardly ever do music, because I'm recommending this also for the soundtrack and also the stuff that happens in the movie. So it's a good week for music on How We Hype. Sing Street is the latest film from director John Carney. And if those of you out there might not know like his name, but you definitely know the movies that he's done before. He's the man behind Once, which has also been turned into a Broadway musical, which is fantastic. And he's also the director behind Begin Again, who got into a bit of hot water with the whole Keira Knightley debacle.
Oh, yes.
But aside from that, I will tell
I love
you that
movie.
Yeah. So he has since very genuinely reached out and apologized for his comments and kind of said he didn't know what he was thinking. So I think that that was genuine. So we can forgive him for that. Sing Street is very much along the same lines in the sense that it does deal with people's relationship with music. This is definitely a much more coming of age film. It's set in the 1980s in Dublin. And basically it is the story of boy meets girl, which is what a lot of his movies tend to circle around. So this young kid in high school, he sees this girl across the street from his school and goes up to talk to her. And she's kind of standoffish. And she says she's a model. She's an aspiring model. She's going to go to London and work. And in order to get her attention, he tells her that he needs a model for the music video that his band is putting together. He doesn't have a band. So after she says yes, he goes out and starts to put a band together and learns a lot about songwriting and stuff. And I've been around music and musicians my whole life. And I think that what this movie does really well is it really kind of showcases the songwriting process, especially for musicians that are a bit greener. And that's just really lovely to see. I will say that if accents, like really thick accents, bother you, I would recommend watching this with subtitles on. It wasn't a problem for me, but some of the Irish accents are a little thick. And the soundtrack is absolutely amazing. Not all of the songs made it onto the official soundtrack that you can find on Spotify and on like iTunes and stuff like that. But the songs that like run through from the 80s, if you're a fan of 80s music throughout the film, are wonderful. And the soundtrack is great as well. I highly recommend the original song Up, which is just beautiful. The thing about John Carney is that he always puts these wonderful original songs into his movies because he does try and put musicians in there first before he runs through actors and stuff like that. So two thumbs up from me for Sing Street, and you should definitely go check it out if you need something to watch this weekend.
Nice. That sounds really good. I'm so happy you said that because I've been really into it. And then the whole John Carney gate happened, and I was like, uh-oh, can I not like his movies now?
I was so upset about that because he's not such a big track record. But, you know, like I said, he did apologize, and I really do feel that his apology was genuine. I feel like we would have, like, figured it out if he was just doing for the press response. But, he has been forgiven in my book, and then the fact that this movie is so wonderful does not hurt either. So I'm definitely excited to see what else he does because he's so good at this kind of thing. And, like, the interesting thing is, too, is, like, even though he always focuses on music, like, music is very much a character in his movies, they don't seem repetitive. Like, they all tell a different story of different people's relationship with music, and that's always really nice to see.
That's good. That's good. Well, for something that is not also not problematic, that was just amazing for me and a really cool experience in general, was I listened to the audiobook for Aristotle and Dante Discovered the Universe over the past week when I was off, you know, in my cabin with the axe. So so I needed something I could listen to and not read. And actually the fact that it ended up being this book was 100% because it's the audiobook is read by Lin-Manuel Miranda. If you didn't know, that's a good reason for diving into audiobooks, is listening to him for like 4 or 5 hours. The book is a LGBT young adult book by Benjamin Ali Sainz. How do you say it when it ends with an N-Z?
Can you spell it out?
S-A with an apostrophe E-N-Z. Or a thing.
Sainz, I think. Themes, something like that.
Okay, that sounds better than what I was trying to do. So there you go. Thank you. So, I mean, the book is really good. It's basically these two teenage boys who are Latin American, who are dealing with all kinds of things. Like, they are growing up, they're figuring out who they want to be, they're figuring out who they like and all of that stuff. And you follow this character who just has a lot of anger issues and is just really sort of has a lot of demons, and he meets this guy called Dante, and it's this love story, and it's beautiful, and Lin-Manuel Miranda is basically falling in love with himself. You know, what's not to like? it was really, really cute, and I just highly recommend listening to it in audiobook format. I mean, not just because it's the guy of the moment reading it, but just because it's very nice to sort of follow along in the main character's thought process in that way. I didn't know 100% that it was an LGBT book when I got it. So I was like, I knew because the back cover just says, oh, they like friendship, blah, 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 they discover truth. So I was like listening, like, are they gonna fall in love? And I was like, I wasn't sure. So that made it even more fun. And at one point in the book, I thought they weren't. And I got really mad and I like didn't want to read anything else. And I had to actually go look up online that they did, because I was like, if they're just setting them up to be friends, I'm going to be so mad. So
I haven't listened to the audiobook, but I just wanted to like second your recommendation because I love that book so much. It's so beautifully written. Yeah. And such a really nuanced portrayal of an LGBT relationship or developing relationship in a way I think that often we don't get mm-hmm. in that sort of book, because they kind of, the author sort of hits you over the head with it, which is, I mean, fine. It's just because there are less of those books around, so there isn't the range, but it's so, so beautiful. I'm sure I've recommended it on Hype before, but everyone should.
Yeah, I think you have.
Definitely read it / now listen to it.
It captures something, and this is going to sound bad, but I mean it as the highest compliment. It captures something that the best fanfics of this genre also capture, which I think is really something that's missing from like mainstream fiction, which is one of the things that sort of makes it feel really, really genuine.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, basically highly recommend listening to that one on your holiday. And Kristen, you have joined a very exclusive Hype club.
Yes, I have. I listened to the audiobook for Ready Player One, is read by Will Wheaton.
I know.
And is so good. He's so fantastic. And like, that's the so fact perfect. That he's sort of mentioned in the book, mm-hmm. like, has a little passing mention is even better. Like, because he reads it and you can just feel like the happiness coming out of him. Yeah, no. Fantastic. I loved Ready Player One.
Was that our first Hype special?
I think it was. Yeah, totally.
It was, yeah. Kristen, you know what that means, right? It means that we don't have to fire you now because all the Hype hosts apparently need to read this book.
You passed the test.
Yeah, exactly.
We need to re-record the special with Kristen because it was in the pre-Kristen days.
Hey, you know what? There's always the movie. There's a special for the movie.
Well, and after I finished the book, because I refused to look at any of the casting stuff, because I had heard about it, but I hadn't, like, remembered who was going to play who or any of that. So I refused to look at any of it until I'd finished. And once I finished and, like, looked at who they've got for some of those roles, I'm like, oh, my God. Like, Simon Pegg for Ogden has me really, really excited. Like, I think it's going to be so much fun. So, yeah, I'm really excited about the movie, and I really liked the book. So another highly recommended audiobook if you're looking for them, but I'm sure it's a good read anyway.
There's a lot of range in How We Hype this week.
That's true. It's a nice summer themed How We Hype. I like it. Gives people a broad view of what to go do, so that's fun. But yeah, no, exciting. I wish I had known about Will Wheaton. Yeah, I remember seeing his name and I was like, oh damn it, because I'd already read it. But it was a good reading experience too. So however you choose to absorb this book, I think is a good way because it's just a really good book. So, I was going to say one more thing, and then we can go into the news, is that you said that Will Wheaton sort of laughed at his own name. I laughed, I think, twice in Aristotle and Dante. A Hamilton reference came up, but like something like, oh, if I have to write one more essay about Alexander Hamilton, and I was like, ha, ha, ha.
So, wait, hold on. Can I tell you guys a really quick story? I found this flash drive and I was like cleaning it out because I was like, oh, maybe I can use this for other things. And it had all of my my old like papers from school on it. And so one of them was like a history of the Burr-Hamilton duel. And I was like, huh, I wonder what I wrote about this back before Hamilton existed, because this was written like 2005. So I'm reading through it and blah, blah, blah. And obviously, like, there's stuff that the play doesn't cover because they need to be concise for time restraints. And the last line, like my grand conclusion was, some people say that Alexander Hamilton threw away his shot. And I was like, I see what you did there, Lynn, because I probably read this in a textbook and you probably read something too.
Whoa.
I know, isn't that funny?
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Wow. You should take a photo and like put it up somewhere.
I should. I'll
work on that. Instagram.
Yeah, yeah. It's like high school Pam talking about Ahem and
yes,
you know.
That's a good use for our Instagram. So you might as well.
I mean, it's a use for it. So.
Hey, there's like four of the five of us going to Comic-Con. Someone has to do something with the Instagram or I'm going to be shocked.
I mean,
it might not be me.
You like all went to see The Cursed Child and there was not a single thing on Instagram. So I'm just saying like.
I was going to say, that was not me. I was stuck in
Selena. Just me and Kyle.
I'm talking about Selena. And
all of me went to see.
Yeah, all of the Selenas.
Right. I'm very ashamed. But so moving into the news now, actually speaking of Cursed Child, we have some interesting news. Not a lot of news, but enough to get the speculation wheels turning, which is that the WB has filed a trademark for Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, which can signal anything from them planning a movie, to them planning a filmed version of the stage play, to them simply just trying to trademark it so no one else takes it. And what is interesting about this is that, I mean, they've trademarked basically the title all over the world, and previously all trademarks for the play were owned by J.K. Rowling, and they've trademarked it, meaning that they have primary rights, so they can do anything, basically, also merchandise. And as someone who has seen the play and failed to Instagram their experience, and is ashamed forever, I think, you know, this is sort of a, I mean, what is obviously the hope is that they film the stage play, because even though obviously seeing it live, blah, 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 it's amazing. I think just seeing the stage play as it is performed by the actors and seeing sort of getting the feel for the atmosphere on stage is what, first of all, I think is what Harry Potter fans really want, but it's also what's going to paint the story in the best light possible. And if they do a movie version, like, I hope they're not doing a movie version. When J.K. Rowling said it needs to be a play, I think it's now very apparent why that is. And let's just really hope that the WB is not gonna try to make this into some kind of thing that needs to be adapted. And I know there's some people saying, oh, great, now Dan Radcliffe can come back. And I'm like, no, please no. So I don't know what you guys have any thoughts on this.
Oh, imagine if they made a film version of the play and cast a white person as Hermione.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine the internet? Look, I think this has to be to film and release like a screening of the play. At this point, I don't think anything else makes sense. And I also don't know if how much money they would want to invest in this in terms of like making a whole film versus just filming the thing that already exists is kind of like free money at this point. Because I have a feeling when the script comes out, the show is going to get a bit of flack from fans for some of the things that happen in it, and to be able to show them might sort of counter that a little. It's like kind of a strategic move, because obviously, I mean, look, whatever. They said it had to be a play at the start. It doesn't make sense for them to release the script, so it definitely doesn't make sense for them to make a movie adaptation of the thing that had to be a play. That said, I just looked at the Selena very nicely sent me a copy of the program.
You've all got them now.
Yes.
And,
happy.
And, and like, even though it makes no sense at all, just seeing some of the photos in the program of the staging and all of the of scenes in the show, like, makes me feel more positive about it, even knowing what happens in it. Isn't that a weird thing?
Oh, that's nice.
You know, just seeing the way that you like just actually seeing it versus hearing what happens or like reading about it in a way that I think, is going to be really problematic for when the script is released. So I wonder if this is sort of a preemptive move, the same way that I think Keep the Secrets was a preemptive move to be like, if people hear what is actually in the plot of this, they might not want to come and see it. It'll be like, well, you bought the script, but you don't totally get it. Now you'll have to buy the DVD and then you'll really understand it, you know, that kind of thing.
Hopefully. Well, and I'd love for them to do a filmed version of the stage play and release it in theaters. Like, would be a way for... it would be a way for, like, everyone to have an idea of the feeling of seeing it. Yeah, you're not seeing it live on stage, but at least you're in a theater with people watching this thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not exactly the live theater feel that you're still missing some of that, but at least it's not you sitting at home watching, yeah, the movie version or whatever. Like, you're gonna miss something trying to get it another way. So I feel like that's probably the best way for them to share it with everyone, which is what everybody's concern was when we found out this was going to be a play.
Right. I mean, I think to add to that, I think this is what everyone wanted them to do from the start, right? Like, even outside of whatever happens in the plot and how people feel about that or whatever, the whole issue that a lot of people had was the sort of exclusivity of Cursed Child. So if they don't do this at some point, I think they will find themselves very offside with fans. So maybe they've finally realized that. I'm kind of surprised they hadn't trademarked this already, honestly. I'm surprised that this is just coming out now. But yeah, I totally agree with Kristen. Like, rekindling that sort of community feeling, I think they sort of need to do that now more than maybe at the start, if that makes sense.
I totally agree, and I think some of the worst comments that I've seen from people have been like, no, they can't do this, Cursed Child needs to be an exclusive experience. And I'm like, who? Like,
are you kidding me?
What is happening? Like, go polish your golden shoes. Like, what the hell? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me that people would feel that, because just completely goes against everything Harry Potter is about. And we've talked endlessly about how this play divides the fandom in a way that is not good and is not sort of what Harry Potter should be. So resisting that everyone should be able to share this experience just because they can't afford a plane ticket and expensive tickets to the theater is just absurd to me.
Yeah, that's very elitist, and it almost kind of sounds like they're just upset that they chose to spend the money. But that was a choice and an ability they had to do.
Yeah.
And then to go back, like, just to leave it on a positive note, I totally agree with what Kristen was saying about creating this experience among fans, because you wouldn't be just seeing this by yourself. I used to work at a movie theater back in college, and it was like an artsier movie theater, and they did show stuff from the Met and from the Globe out in London. And it really was an experience for the people that chose to go out and see this, because you buy a special ticket. Everybody's there for this one thing, and it's a one-time showing only. I don't think a one-time only showing would work for something like Cursed Child, but I do think that, like, that idea that you're going to experience this with either, like, theater fans who are curious or mostly Harry Potter fans in general is a really nice way to kind of appease both. And you'll still get the original cast, which is like all anybody can ever hope for, because you do want to see it with these people that these playwrights and Joe both envisioned in these roles.
Exactly. And you know, it's just a final note on this, I guess, is that I'm really glad Merrima said that the pictures made her feel a little bit better, because I think, you know, the play is so fantastic. It's so good. It's so amazing. Like, seriously, it is. And people don't believe us now when we say that. But it really, really, truly, truly is. And I just really want this to happen and to be released as soon as possible. I think this exclusivity thing is nonsense. And I understand why they can't just release it now, because they want people to go to Britain to see it. But come on. Just let people see it. Like, what the hell? So, yeah. Make this happen, WB.
Speaking of original cast, I guess, there was some exciting news for Hamilton fans, on the Hypeable stuff, at least, this week.
yeah, we're very happy.
While sad news for everyone else. So, this many of the cast of Hamilton were getting to that point in the run where the original cast start leaving. And of course, the biggest moment was Lin-Manuel Miranda, who maybe is pursuing his career as an audiobook narrator, has decided to step down from Hamilton. We had heard about a month ago this was happening, and then July 9th was his final performance. It was also the final performance of Philippa Sue, who plays Eliza, and Leslie Odom Jr., who plays Burr. And the Hyperbole staff wrote a beautiful article to Lin and about what he means to them and what Hamilton does. And he read it and tweeted about it. So everyone was very excited about that. But then we have further to this, it's just been announced that David Diggs and Renee Elise Goldsberry are also going to be leaving. David Diggs, I wonder what he's doing, because this was announced really, really quickly. He's leaving as of like tomorrow as we're recording, July 15th. And I think this is only announced this week. So that's pretty quick. Usually they give you a little more notice. So I wonder what particular reason that is for, but I guess we might find out. And then Renee is expected to leave in the fall. And this is also timed with the announcement of the cast for Chicago. And I will just shout out to Karen Olivo, who is going to be in the Chicago cast, because Hamilton fans might recognize her as the originator of Vanessa in The Heights. And she's going to be playing, who is she playing in the Chicago? She's not playing Eliza, she's playing Angelica. So yeah, it's kind of coming full circle, but we had to say goodbye, and let's all just remind ourselves, luckily, that we know that they have filmed it with the original cast, so maybe we'll get to see that at some point.
Yeah, cross his fingers.
Yeah, and toes and every fun part.
Well, and I think I saw that Renee Elise Goldsberry has already been cast in one of the new Netflix series too, so it's not going to be long before all of them are scooped up to do fun, crazy new projects. So,
and Philippa Sue is going to star in Amelie, which is going to Broadway, I think, next year. And Lin is involved with Moana, the Disney film, and he's starring in Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of happening. Oh, and also shout out to the sweetest moment ever in the final curtain call, which Kristen will appreciate, I'm sure, they started playing the West Wing theme as he did his final bow to him. Obviously, it was very evident that he did not know that that was going to happen. Alex Lacamoire, who is the sort of musical genius behind who works with Lin, they had maybe organized to surprise him, and they started playing that, and it was very emotional, guys, because he's like the world's number one West Wing fan, and also the West Wing theme song is just emotional anyways.
Yeah, it was really, really cute. Karen came in and played it for me. She was like, "You need to see this." And I was like, "Okay." And I'm like, "Oh, yes. It's Lin. That's cute." And then I'm like, "Oh!" As soon as the opening bar started, I was like, "Oh, they did it." And she was like, "Yeah, look at him." It was really cute.
It was really lovely.
That's amazing.
Oh, the next story is me. Sorry, I was thinking about that final curtain call, and I was like, oh, that really was sweet.
She was just like, yeah.
Yeah, I was, you know, all the feels. Anyway, moving on to a completely different topic that enrages Selena like no other.
Oh my god, you guys.
Pokemon Go is officially here, unless you're Selena and live in Europe. But it's here
unless
in America.
Unless you're everyone, except for like all of you guys.
We have it. Australia
yeah,
has
you
it.
All have it.
Yeah, have it. Yeah, it's just you. No. You're the one that's only.
It's just out in the cold. It's cold. Just not America and Australia and New Zealand. Whatever. Go on. Tell your story.
Pokemon Go is officially here. If you're among some of these lucky countries that already have it. The app was released last week, and basically it allows us all the ability to be real-life Pokemon masters in the real world. And I just got to tell you guys that I had cousins in town from Texas, and they were, like, super into it, so we all downloaded the game we were playing while we were taking them around San Francisco. And it's, like, I can see why people are completely addicted. It was so crazy to be, like, out in the streets in these random city blocks and seeing all these people playing and, like, becoming friends and, like, walking together towards the next Pokemon stop checkpoint or whatever you call it. So yeah, it's probably just as fun as Selena's imagining it to be. So I really hope you get it soon, because I kind of feel bad that you want it so badly and it's not available in Denmark.
Yeah, you want it so badly, and like I'm not even playing it, and I could be, but I'm not.
Yeah.
Oh, let me tell you, I'll tell you a funny story. There was a news report in, I live in Sydney in Australia, and there's a park not that far from me, I guess, that's at the junction between three Pokestops or something. So there are like all these Pokemon there all the time, and the park is near a big apartment complex. And apparently the police have had to go there to like get people to move on, because it's just been filled with like hundreds of people every night trying to catch Pokemon. And I think I saw a news report the other night that like residents were water bombing the Pokemon players who were in the park because they were being really noisy and like loitering and just being a nuisance.
You know, that actually has happened to me in my neighborhood, because we have a lot of kids here, and like, you know, it's like summertime. I always forget, because I've been out of school for like ages, but it's summertime and like they have later curfews. And I'm like a grandma now, trying to go to sleep at like 10 to get ready for Comic-Con and stuff. And they're right outside my window, like in the lawn, trying to catch freaking Squirtle. And I'm like, can you guys please just like ease on down the road or quietly catch your Pokemon so that I can sleep, because this is kind of ridiculous. And speaking to that as well, there have been some problems with people trespassing, as well as just Pokemon showing up in places that are kind of inappropriate for you to be playing this game. I know there was a huge news report that came out this week as well, in regards to the Holocaust Museum in DC, which is obviously a place of solace and reflection, and they were really upset that people were playing in there, and they're trying to get themselves taken off.
Not just that, yeah, but like the Pokemon that was showing up there was like a poison gas Pokemon.
Well, that is a post. Well, as yeah. I read on Matchlet, that's actually a rumor. They weren't able to actually confirm that that was the case, but you're right.
Oh,
that
really?
Those were definitely claims that people were.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what they were saying, with like that they don't think that it was intentional. If it was, it's really messed up. And no one has been able to confirm that. But either way, I mean, I totally understand them wanting to abstain from the Pokemon Fun. There are a lot of places that like this game should not be played. So it's going to be interesting to see how they adapt to that as they move towards a wider world release. But moral of the story is, if you're playing, just like
opt out, right?
Yeah, I think so, because even in like the library, like I popped into the library to return some books, and like kids were being super noisy. I was surprised that nobody told them they needed to like keep it down and not run through the aisles. So it's
it's an interesting thing.
Meanwhile, Karen and I are at the mall, and she's trying to decide who's playing Pokemon Go and who's not. Like, we're walking around, and it's are they looking at their phone or are they playing Pokemon Go? Like, it's so much fun now to just try and decide who out there is just, you know, a normal person playing, doing normal things in their day, and who's hunting Pokemon at the mall.
Pokemon Go is pretty normal now, right?
I know, like, I was going to say.
Well, like, yeah. There was a 60-year-old man standing all by himself in the middle of the parking lot with his phone, and Karen was like, is he playing Pokemon Go? And I'm like, I don't know, maybe, sure, he's playing Pokemon Go.
I mean, there was that one story that went viral, supposedly. See, the thing is about these stories, like, of people playing, it's like, you never know what's made up for, like, the lulls and what's real, but there's a great Pokemon Go community on Facebook if you want to hear some people's funny stories. And apparently this guy just, like, snatched one right under the noses of all these young spring chickens. So, I mean, Pokemon fans come in all shapes, ages, and, you know.
It's just, like, it's just a fun thing. And I think people need to sort of, because there's already this backlash saying, oh, people are lemmings, and oh, people are, like, just gonna go do stupid things. And I'm like, you know what? If you're gonna follow your phone into some stupid place, like, you are stupid. Like, I'm sorry, but if you look at your phone and you cross the road, you're stupid. Just don't be stupid, because this is just the thing, that it's fun. Like, I was thinking, I really want it because I want to go for a run and have my phone, and maybe there's a Pokemon and I can run to the Pokemon. It gives me a reason, you know, like zombie run, or like it gives me a reason to go visit a place in town I've never been because there might be Pokemon there. It's like a fun sort of extension to your life. And I don't, I mean, I say that now, I don't have it yet. Watch me like go into the construction site and, you know, look for the Machamp running around in there. But
I totally agree in that. And I've seen a lot of stories about people saying it's really helped them with their mental health, and it's been really helpful in terms of like doing more physical activity. And I think that's all amazing. But then I also saw a story which was, I don't know if this was in Australia, but was like a proven story. It was not a rumor of people using Pokemon Go to rob people by like up a kind of, isolated place where the Pokemon would be, and then people would go there and then they'd like get held up, and that's not okay. And the other thing that I saw, it was actually really interesting commentary about this, was that there are some Pokemon, I guess, that you can only catch at night, that are only like come out at night or whatever, and that's cool. That's a facet of the game. But the commentary was saying like, well, it doesn't really recognize that, you know, if you're a certain type of person, like if you're a woman, you're probably not going to be walking around at night by yourself. Or in America, say, there were people saying like, if you're an African American male, like you're not going to be able to go around catching these Pokemon at night, like walking around by yourself on your phone. So there's a really interesting social element to this that I feel like as it rolls out in more places, I'm just really intrigued to see like how the game changes and how they kind of respond to those issues, because that's interesting.
And I was just gonna say, it's funny that you mentioned the night stuff too, because we live in a very quiet small town now, but because, you know, Pokemon craze has hit the nation, people are out at like all hours of the night, and they're not, it's not just like one person, they travel in packs. And so yesterday I was like out at midnight because I had to go down to the printing, like the 24-hour printing store, and everything was like really quiet. All of a sudden I see like this big group of like really large men walking, like stalking towards me. And I like froze. And I was like, oh my God, like, is this how it happens? Like, am I going to get held up? Purely because the street was empty. And then I look over and they're all on their phones, like trying to catch this damn Pokemon. So it's like, I think that it's going to be like, it's more like I forgot. And I don't know. I like shudder to think a tiny little old lady thinking she's going to get robbed because all of these like teens are just like stalking towards people in the middle of the night. Yeah, like in the bushes too. Like, then I went back to my car and this guy was like loitering by, and I was like, oh my God, can I not go back to my car? And I realized that he was like hunting something.
Yeah.
it's been a really weird week, you guys. Like, it's like basically, I live like out in the woods, like in the mountains, basically. Like, it's just, there's a lot of places for people to be hiding.
Well, I mean, with the success of Pokemon Go, I'm waiting for the Fantastic Beasts version where hunting down magical beasts, and I will get that one because I am not a Pokemon fan. I never have been. So it's like, I didn't want to like jump on the bandwagon. I try really hard not to do that kind of stuff. It looks like fun, but I don't really know much about it. So it's like, okay, I have fun watching Karen play, but if they had like a Fantastic Beasts one, I would definitely do it. And I think that'd be like crazy. Like, I'd go catch a Niffler. That'd be sweet.
I just want the Pokemon.
I want. You'll get it. Don't worry.
And like, meanwhile, people are downloading
it
illegally.
You can play
it
at Comic-Con.
Because I can't get it from my app. From my app store. What? I have my own app store.
You're acting as though I wouldn't share my phone with you.
Oh my God.
So you can experience the joy.
You can download it in the American app store when you're in America.
Oh my God, guys. Comic-Con. No, I can't. I can't. I have to have a special account for that one. But I was just gonna say, imagine if Comic-Con is just full of people playing Pokemon Go. Like, that's just Comic-Con.
There
like,
are going to be signs that say no playing Pokemon Go on the exhibit hall floor. I can promise you after the first day, because people are going to be running around, running into people, knocking people over, trying to catch Pokemon. Yeah. And it's, I can almost
There's like going to be like coming after a celebrity, and they're going to be like, oh my God, I'm so famous. And everyone runs past. They're like, get that Zubat. That would be hilarious. Anyway, we'll figure it out. So what's the next story?
I was going to say, good times. Well, moving from video games to a world of video games, sure. Mm-hmm. We found out that Wreck-It Ralph is going to get a sequel, which I'm really, really excited about because I loved the first movie. The film is going to be co-directed by the director of the original, Rich Moore, and co-writer Phil Johnston, and is set to hit theaters March 9th of 2018, so it's a little more than a year and a half away or something like that. John C. Reilly was a part of the live stream when they announced this, which didn't exactly work well, but they did reveal that the plot is going to involve Ralph and Vanellope. It's going to involve Ralph and Vanellope hitting the internet. And he says, this time Ralph's wrecking wreaks havoc on the web, as only he can do. Characters we loved in the first film are back, and we are ecstatic to be working with them and the actors who voiced them once again. So it sounds like a lot of people are going to be back for this, which is good, and it's going to be a good time. I really liked Wreck-It-Ralph. It was really well done, and it was a really fun story. So I'm excited to see Ralph run wild on the internet.
All right, so we'll take a break from the regularly scheduled movie news to talk about books for some reason. It was announced that young adult author Margaret Stoll is going to be writing the new Captain Marvel comic series, which is very exciting. She wrote the Black Widow novel Forever Red. I think that came out last year? Question mark. So the series is going to premiere in 2017, so that'll be when the Captain Marvel movie comes out. Which we still don't know who is going to be in it, but we think it's Brie Larson. We'll wait and see. And yeah, it's good times. I don't know if you guys read Forever Red. I did not, but now I don't know why, because Black Widow. But yeah, I guess Margaret Stoll is kind of carving out a little comic book niche for herself. So that's fun.
Mm-hmm. Forever Red got really good reviews as far as I remember.
Yeah, it did.
I liked it, so.
It did. And she wrote the Beautiful Creatures series people might be more familiar with.
Oh, sorry that I put this randomly in the middle of the movie news.
Book
I
news.
Thought it was a movie news.
back to movies. I was sometimes like, I don't know why this is here, but okay.
It's because when I have to get up at 6 to do this, that kind of stuff happens. I'm sorry, guys. So from books to this news story that I don't even know how to intro. This is basically, if not for Pokemon Go, this would be like the biggest thing, but because of Pokemon Go, it kind of got pushed to the side a little bit. But all over this past week, we've had this completely insane development of what was supposed to be a really awesome story. So first of all, what happened? I'm talking about Star Trek now and the Sulu debacle. So the first thing that happened was that all Australia's fault, basically. An Australian screening of Star Trek. What is it called? Beyond. Star Trek Beyond revealed that Sulu, who was played in the new movies by John Cho, is gay. He has a same-sex partner and a daughter. And it's really wonderful. And they had John Cho comment on it. And he was like, it's so good because it's like incidental. It's not a big deal. It just kind of happens quietly and it's really sweet. And this was really cool. We posted about it. We got really excited. We got sort of the obligatory backlash of, this is a spoiler. Rawr! I think those people have sort of like quietly moved away now because this is not a spoiler. This is like a social conversation now. This is amazing. We were so happy about this. Then later in the day, I woke up to this news and I was like, why is the world, you know, out to get me? A surprising sort of person came out of the woodwork to oppose this, and that person was George Takei, who played the original Sulu, who said that, you know, he was really against this being Sulu as a character. He had sort of argued against it to the producers and to John Cho, and he was really disappointed. And because it went against Gene Roddenberry's original vision for the character, he thought they should have introduced a new character, which was like some very sad things to say, because obviously he can feel however he wants about this character, but it sort of plays into the debate of that we've been having with Captain America and with Elsa and with all of these established superheroes and characters that are made in a time when LGBT characters weren't necessarily as accepted, saying, okay, if we're examining this from a modern lens, why is this like the one thing that is sacred about them? And now George Takei was basically elevating that viewpoint. Then Nick, Simon Pegg came out and wrote a wonderful response. First he wrote to The Guardian, then he wrote on his own website saying, basically explaining why they made it Sulu as a nod to George Takei and why it was important for them to choose an established character as opposed to introducing a new character who would be defined by their sexuality, which is such a cool thing. And I was like, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. And then Zachary Quinto has been coming out in favor of it. A lot of other actors have been coming out in favor of it. And finally, today, to sort of cap up this tale of confusion, George Takei has clarified that he's really happy that they're doing this at all. He's just still really upset that it's Sulu because it goes against Gene Roddenberry's vision, and he stands by his opinion that it should have been a new character. So they're sort of at a standstill right now, but things are civil. So that was a lot of me explaining what is going on. We've been told we don't do that enough, so I've definitely done that for this story. Now, react.
Do we not do that enough? I love this. I think it's great. And I loved Simon Pegg's response. I would encourage everyone to go and read that in full on his blog.
He just instead said all of, the right things. It was
And it was really interesting because he explained, like, is he an executive? Is he a producer on these films? Was he the writer? Really? Yeah. Oh, I totally didn't know that. Yeah, because I was like, wow, he's way more involved than I thought he was. but yeah, it was a really great explanation of sort of the process of how this happened. And you know, I think even though George Takei obviously has his problems with it, the way that they explain it was obviously they chose Sulu as an homage to George Takei, and there's something kind of lovely about that. And it's a shame that he can't see that, but, like, you know, actors feel various ownership over their characters, and I totally understand that. I think Zachary Quinto summarized it very nicely in an interview. There's a little clip of it, might be on Hyperball. But yeah, this is great, of course. And we posted a thing on our Tumblr that was like, you know, now does this mean like Star Wars and Disney and Marvel, they all have to be like, oh, damn it, now we have to also do this thing. And then someone else was like, it's the space race we've always waited for. Or something. And I was like, I love the internet sometimes. But yeah, I'm really hoping that this pushes a lot of the other studios into doing something similar, because it's obviously outrageous that they haven't done it yet. And I am personally really, really pleased that they have chosen to take this path with an established character. I think it makes a lot of difference. I totally understand people who are big Star Trek fans and think, like, you know, it's a different version of the character than the one they maybe grew up with or whatever, but I think it's really important in terms of normalizing representation to take characters that we already know and identify with, or, you know, whatever. And yeah. And so that was a very good explanation, Selena. And I am very on board with this. So yeah, it's really good. It's really good.
And I understand and agree with what George is trying to say. Like, he was good friends with Roddenberry. This character is very close to his heart. So you can understand that for him, he played it in one mindset because it was the only mindset he could have at the time. Like, he talks a lot about how he and Gene had discussions about including LGBT characters, and they couldn't because of the atmosphere of the time period it was it existed in. So, like, I can understand why he's so protective of this character, but I'm also so glad that Simon Pegg and the writers decided that while he's not 100% on board, this is our movie and this is a different time, and we want to represent this in a different way than has been done so far in so many other fandoms. And, you know, honestly, I think it's more in the spirit of what Gene hopefully would have wanted. Mm-hmm. Because he always wanted to introduce these characters. He always wanted people to feel represented, but he couldn't do it all the way because of the time he was trapped in. So, like, I kind of hope that, you know, Gene is kind of smiling down and saying, I'm really glad that this has happened, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really glad you said that, Kristen, because I think maybe something that is getting a little lost in the discussion is the fact that Star Trek has always been sort of ahead of its time in terms of representation. Certainly, we saw with a lot of the TV shows. So it's kind of appropriate that it's Star Trek that, I mean, it should not have taken this long, but I'm glad that they're sort of, like you said, they're sort of honoring the legacy of what this show was, which has always been a really diverse, various standards, sort of universe. And yeah, like that, this is just a continuation of that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I said this too in one of the articles, that I'm actually really happy that Disney didn't get to take this honor, because they've done nothing with their movies. So their record is particularly appalling when it comes to LGBT inclusion, in that they have none. So I'm just happy that this went to something like Star Trek, and that they sort of beat Disney, quote unquote. And I hope the space race is accurate. But and you know, to Kristen's point, it is, I do understand too, George Takei, where he's coming from. I understand his personal sentiment. I just think when you apply a personal sentiment to a large thing like this, it loses its, like, it just goes with the wrong message. And that's why I think I'm glad he cleared it up. But I do think one final point that should be made, because we always get into this, well, why do you have to mess with existing characters when you can introduce a new character that's gay? Not even regarding the fact that they've quote-unquote mess with everything else about the character, like Spock Uhura, for example. I think one thing people simply do not realize is that right now in Hollywood, there are like 5-10% new stuff making it big. You know, everything is a sequel or a remake or a reimagining or a prequel. Like, such a thing as new characters is already difficult enough, not to just to get on screen, but to actually get people to care about. At a time in Hollywood where we are doing another Star Trek and another Star Wars and another Wreck-It Ralph and another Captain America and all of these things, and we're revisiting all these old worlds as opposed to creating new ones, if we're going to have LGBT representation, we need to go back to, and we need to take the source material that we're so into updating to modern values and telling from a modern perspective and putting a new twist on. And we need to say, well, that's not exempt from LGBT inclusion. That should not be the final frontier, even though it kind of is, for how to reimagine characters in a modern setting. And when you're introducing a new character as being specifically LGBT, and Simon Pegg said this much better than I could, and I'm so glad he did, it's nice to know someone gets it, is you're not going to get an attachment from the audience, because you're going to get those people that aren't going to identify with the character, they're not going to care about the character, they're not going to see the character as anything other than LGBT. Their role is to be the LGBT character. Taking someone like Sulu and saying, oh, by the way, he's gay. Like, that matters too. Not that we should introduce new LGBT characters. I'm so into Poe Dameron. I'm like 90% sure it's gonna happen. but still, we need this too. And I really love that Simon Pegg said this, because it's, as I said, it's nice to know that it's not just us sitting here shouting about it. You know, people in Hollywood are actually agreeing with it. At least some of them are. So there.
Well said.
Thank you.
It's about time we talk about musical movies. Why not?
I think it's about time.
I mean, it's been long enough. Jeez. No, we finally got a trailer for the Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone movie La La Land, and it's adorable. And you get to hear Ryan Gosling sing a little bit, and it's really cute. If you haven't had a chance to check out the trailer... Good. It's fine. It's very melodic and it's speak singy. It's, you know, he's not a crooner. It's not.
Why are you going to be so negative, Marimo?
He's not belting. But it's adorable. It's really cute.
It's very sweet. I'm just saying, look.
I'm very excited about this movie. Like, the still that's been making the rounds for, I don't know, months now of them dancing in the street has me so, so very excited. But it's just, it looks like fun. It looks really cute. These two have crazy chemistry, which we've seen before. And yeah, I'm just excited for the movie. I really can't wait. For those that haven't heard about it or heard much about it at all, here's the official synopsis. In this modern take on the Hollywood musical from Damien Chazelle, the Academy Award-nominated writer and director of Whiplash, Sebastian, Ryan Gosling's character, and Mia, Emma Stone, are drawn together by their common desire to do what they love. But as success mounts, they are faced with decisions that begin to fray the fragile fabric of their love affair, and the dreams they worked so hard to maintain in each other threaten to rip them apart. So it's, you know, it sounds cute, and a new, fresh Hollywood musical is definitely new. Like, I mean, Pitch Perfect kind of has a, you know, a taste of that, but this feels more like old-fashioned musical type, so.
I love this. It's, they're doing, like, it's like a classic movie musical from the golden age of movie musicals, but a modern one. And you know what? In that case, Ryan Gosling's singing is very appropriate because none of the men in those movies could sing. They could, well, occasionally, but mostly they could dance. So this is really, this is so fun. I feel like we've been waiting for this trailer for such a long time. Yeah, I think you're right, because that still has just been going around.
Yeah, that still leaked a long time ago, or it came out a long time ago, and it's just been forever. So every so often I'll see it again and I'm like, oh yeah, where's that movie? So yeah, we've got
that's
a trailer.
The only image like that exists from that movie, and it's really frustrating, and I couldn't get the high still enough from high quality still from the trailer to put in, so yeah. A struggle.
Bad times. Yeah. Okay, well, switching gears now to TV news to finish up. We had another departure. I had all the departure news. Jessica Williams has left The Daily Show, and I want to talk about this because I am obsessed with Jessica Williams. I don't know if any of you guys have been watching The Daily Show since Jon Stewart left and Trevor Noah started. I did start watching it, but I don't need to watch it now because I watch Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, aka the best show on television. And I think The Daily Show's kind of maybe had its moment. So it's not totally surprising to me that Jessica Williams is leaving. She has a deal with Comedy Central, I think. So she's hopefully going to be developing her own show. And I think that'll be really good because her bits on The Daily Show are always a lot of people's favorites, I know. And yeah, I think The Daily Show is maybe getting a little bit to the sinking ship stage. So it's time for people to jump off. Unfortunately, they've had a few moments recently that were really sort of off key. And, yeah, I don't know. People want, like, it's interesting because John Oliver is obviously only one night a week and Samantha Bee is only one night a week. And I wonder if only having to do one night means that they can really hone it down and make every moment hit in a way that something like The Daily Show, which is on like four times a week, can't do just by virtue of having to fill space. So yeah, it's interesting, but definitely we'll be keeping an eye on what Jessica Williams is doing next because she is hilarious and amazing and I love her. And she was really the only reason I was still watching The Daily Show occasionally. So now I don't have to do that anymore either. So that's awesome for me. Good times.
Okay, we're going to go back to musical news. Theater news.
This is so poorly organized.
Hey! I do my best.
Sorry.
It's all right.
That was too far. That was rude of me.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to switch it back to musical theater news because, you know, we have to, if we're going to give you guys some bad news, we have to give you guys some happier maybe news. Hairspray, of course, is a thing that's happening live later on this year on NBC, and they have announced the latest high-profile star to be joining the cast. Ariana Grande is going to be playing Penny, who is, oh my gosh, I completely forgot her name, Tracy's best friend. So she's going to be basically, if you saw the movie version, she'll be Amanda Bynes's character. So she's going to have a really fun role. She's kind of there for comedic relief. Her mom's really stern. So she's kind of the kid that wants to hang, but her mom's always trying to rein her in. For her part, Ariana Grande seems really, really excited to take on this role. She does come from a theater background, so it does make sense that, you know, she would be down to do something like this. After it was announced that she was going to be joining the cast, she tweeted, "I am now a checkered board chick," which is one of the bigger lines from the play. And she also expressed her love for Carrie Butler, who originated the role of Penny on Broadway. And Carrie, in turn, responded saying that she was really, really excited for Ariana to take on the role for NBC's production. The cast is filled with some bigger names. Jennifer Hudson is going to be in it. Kristen Chenoweth has also signed on, as well as Martin Short and Dancing with the Stars' Derek Hough. So it sounds like it's going to be a good time. I think that she's a great choice for this. She's definitely got the pipes for it. And I think that given her background in, you know, doing comedy on Nickelodeon and stuff like that, it's going to be a really good role for her. So I'm excited to see what she does with it.
I'm excited. I feel like they've transitioned these from being like hate watching to actually like great watching.
Well, NBC, you know? Ooh, like, really knocked it out. Like, no, it wasn't NBC. Was it? It was Fox. Then, well, NBC did too with The Wiz.
The Wiz was amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. And then Fox.
And then Grease was really good.
It was amazing. If you haven't seen Grease, I mean, I had low expectations, and it was like it completely like knocked my socks off. So, I was impressed.
Yeah, and the Hairspray is shaping up to look really, really great as well. So I feel like they've kind of hit their stride with it, which is awesome because who doesn't want to see more musicals?
Right, and Hairspray is like such a fun musical too, and it's got a really great message. It's a great message for today and age specifically, where we need to see unity in our communities and not necessarily separation. So I think it's going to be really, really fun.
Cool.
All right, well, sticking with TV, but a very different kind of TV, although, you know, I'd love to see a musical version of The Flash. We found out recently that Harry Potter alum Tom Felton, who we all know and love as Draco Malfoy, will be a regular next season. He will be playing a character called Julian Dorn, a fellow CSI at the Central City Police Department, who suspects there's more to Barry Allen than just his good guy reputation. So, yeah, apparently this is a brand new character. He's not pulled from the comics, so they can have free reign with what they do with him, and I think that's really, really fun. The Flash has done that before, and it's good fun when you know that somebody doesn't have any real limits. Like, they've done that with Felicity a little bit, too, on Arrow, that they don't have to stick to previous conceptions of the character and all that. So, and to have someone as high-profile as Tom Felton on your show, like, that's really good times. We also got a first look at Wally West, who will be Kid Flash in season 3. And there's been a lot of hints to what Wally, you know, his future is going to be on the show. And we got a first look at it. And the suit looks great. I personally think it's awesome. I know there's been a few people who weren't in love with it. But, yeah, I think it looks really cool. And it'll be fun to see him appear. He will be in the suit, hopefully, in the premiere episode. So this will be a major part of season 3. So, yeah, I'm all kinds of good and exciting things happening on The Flash.
It's so cool that Tom Felton is going to be in The Flash.
I know, like, right?
It's just so cool. I don't know.
Wait, Wally West is Kenan Lonsdale. That guy is Australian.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, I love him. Sorry, I didn't know that that's who it was. I just
and
realized.
I'm extra excited because the season premiere is on my birthday, so it's like,
oh, that's a cool present.
They're doing it just for me,
obviously. Yeah, they've had some time to plan it, and now they have finally worked out the best birthday present for you.
Exactly, yeah. It's fabulous.
Well, Kristen is celebrating her birthday with The Flash, but the Spice Girls have decided to celebrate their 20th birthday with everybody. Three of these Spice Girls took to their websites to kind of tease some kind of special celebration for marking the 20th anniversary of, you know, their debut single, Wannabe. So Mel B, Jerry, and Emma all got together, and it's just a really, really cute video. They kind of just talk about how they really appreciate the fact that the fan base has stood by them for two decades, and they said that they want to thank the fans back. They said they want to celebrate and have a party. They're not sure what they want to do, but when they do know what they're going to do, they'll be sure to let us know. It's a really, really cute video. It's really short. So if you guys want to check that out, it's over on hypeable.com. Of course, everybody's a little upset that Sporty and Posh didn't make it to this, so we're not really sure if they're going to be a part of this supposed 20th anniversary celebration, but we're all crossing our fingers that all five girls reunite for whatever they have in store for us. And we'll keep an eye out and keep you guys posted as details surface for this.
Cool. This is exciting. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. So that pretty much brings us to the end of the news. And we hope that you liked it. We ran a little long, so we're going to try to get through TV show of the week as quickly as we can. Now, me and Merma, and I assume everyone else, have been watching Unreals. Let's start with that one. I think I'm caught up. I'm six episodes in. Is that the most recent?
What do you think? Are you thinking of it?
Well, I like it a lot. I'm not as into it as I was last season, mainly because I feel like, and this might just be me sort of buying into the drama too much, but I feel like it's too obvious which girls are going home. Like, I feel like when they do an episode all about the girl and then she goes home, like she's the main source of conflict, and then at the end she goes home and I'm like, okay, but yeah. Like that to me is a little bit too formulaic for me. I like a lot of the, like, I feel like they get really, really real with some things that I really like. What do you think?
I'm kind of in a weird place with it right now. There's a lot that I am enjoying. I'm enjoying some stuff that happened with Quinn's storyline most recently. I'm not enjoying a storyline that's happening with Rachel at the moment, mm-hmm. With Rachel and Jeremy. I am like vaguely uncomfortable about how that's going to play out. And I think depending what happens with that will affect what I think of the show significantly, because they're sort of on shaky ground a little bit, as far as I can tell with what they're doing. I think in general, I think they're focusing too much on the like producers and the crew of the show this season, mm-hmm. versus last season. They focus more on the contestants. And then you would kind of duck out of that and, you know, other stuff would be going on. And I kind of liked that a little more. And I think when you did that, you had more time to spend with the contestants, and then you didn't have to do that sort of focusing on one or two and then they were the ones who were going to go home sort of thing. So I wonder if maybe that's kind of one of the sources of the problems. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess it was always going to be hard because I loved the season one so much. And I'm not enjoying it, but I think it's going to depend a lot on how some of these storylines play out, if that makes sense. I'm trying not to spoil people because it hasn't, like, the episode didn't come out that long ago, so hopefully that didn't ruin anything for anyone.
Not for me.
You're like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, I agree with you. I think that's absolutely true. I think that they have this behind the scenes reality show format, and I don't think they're using it to its full potential yet, but I mean there's still some episodes left, so we'll have to wait, mm-hmm. and see what they do with it.
Yeah, that's true.
And they get rid of the most exciting people, like that's the thing. I'm like, oh, like why?
Yeah, I'm wondering like what I just don't know. I'm not sure what they're trying to do with it this season, I guess. Like, season one seemed so, everything was so, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing this, and had that really meta aspect to it. And I kind of feel like that's been a little lost this season, which is a shame because that's one of the aspects I really, really enjoyed. But I also can't see their end game. So, you know, even though each week I feel like I know which girl is going home, I don't understand how this is all going to work in the long run. So that's good. You know, that's a positive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I still have believe Brittany's, I think it was Brittany's theory. She wrote up an article about one of the contestants.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that theory is like, it's truth in my brain. Like,
I
it's happening.
Yeah, me too.
Right. Yeah, so now it's shading everything that character is doing. And I'm like, okay, so I hope that something like that is coming down the pike to kind of throw everything into.
That would be amazing. I would actually love that. And I saw someone, I think someone commented on that being like, if you want to read it, go over to hyperball.com and go to our Unreal section and you'll know it when you see it. But I saw someone comment on that being like, this just seems so like it's going to happen that I now feel like I've just read a spoiler and I wish that I hadn't. Like, I know the feeling.
Yeah. Like, it's a theory.
I'm like, oh, duh.
But it's such a good theory, yeah.
Right, well, I mean, it's such a good theory that I don't even want to say it on the podcast in case it ruins
it. Yeah, well, that's exactly, yeah, I'm like, I want to reference really it because it's so great, but yeah, exactly. I don't want it to be a spoiler in case it is, even though we don't know.
No, but yeah, it's, yeah, anyway.
Okay, so Kristen, catch us up on the Big Brother, speaking of reality.
I mean, it's summer. I watch two shows, Unreal and Big Brother. So, you know, I kind of take a break from everything else and read a lot. But no,
but
Big
now
Brother.
You know, it's all fake, though.
It doesn't matter. Big Brother has the, you know, the really fun part about Big Brother is, yes, some of it is staged and they do give leading questions to contestants. We know all of that. But so much of the show happens off the actual show and during the live feeds, and they're on camera 24/7, so there's a lot that they can't hide. Like, you know, it's not like Unreal where it's all staged and they can make whatever, you know, tell whatever story they want. If you're watching the live feeds, you know what's going on in the house all the time. But no, Big Brother's been really fun this week. They actually had an opportunity to address some really interesting things. One of the contestants, who's a beloved former contestant named Frank, he's very vocal and he tries to joke around with the girls in the house, and he does it by insulting them, and they all have a problem with it. But because this is a game, they have to be quiet in the game because they don't want to jeopardize their place. But the show did a very good job of using their private diary room sessions where they just talk to the camera and talk about what they're feeling and how they're seeing things in the house. They did a really good job of letting the girls talk about what's going on and how it's not okay. And Frank was addressed by one of the other male house guests, you know, and talked to him about what's going on and why he's doing things that are not okay and all of that. And they handled it really well, which is not always good for Big Brother. So it's been an interesting season so far. It's just started, really. They're getting into the heart of things now, but it's, you know, it's been an interesting season. We'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, Kristen, I was going to say, because I watched a show with my mom. It's like the only show we watch together. And that really made me uncomfortable. And I'm so glad that they were real with the whole situation, especially between James and Mama Day, because I think it's really important to show that, like, yeah, these girls seem like really ditzy, and like they a lot of times have them parading around and like, you know, skimpier outfits because it's summer. Like all of the, like, whenever they do competitions like that, they're always in like bikinis. But at the end of the day, they're still like, they should still be respected. And I give them a lot of props for showcasing that, or choosing to showcase that, because it's very important to know that they're like, they're not objects, and it doesn't matter how you act around like your own family at home. Like, if you don't know somebody because they really are all strangers, you really need to respect boundaries. And so that was a really nice thing to see on, you know, a show that's fairly vapid, but that was
especially
a nice,
especially with Mama Day, Davon. She has a daughter who she knows is young now, but will someday watch this. And she just kept coming back to, my daughter's going to see this, and I don't want her to think that it's okay. But because I'm in this game, I can't just tell him right now what he's doing is not okay and yell at him, because it will affect how I play this game and where it goes from here. So it was really, really, you know, lovely for them to actually give her time on camera to tell that story and to make sure that it's, you know, it's not just something that people who watch the live feeds know. It's something everyone who watches the show knows, that she's concerned and that this is not just something to let go, that if someone's treating you this way, you should stand up to them.
And it's also nice to know that, like, the rest of the contestants, like, especially the guys, too, are, like, completely behind her in that. In the fact that, like, it's not okay to keep calling her loose or a slut or to be, like, smacking her butt. Like, everybody is pretty much in agreement that this is not okay. And yeah, I think that was very important to show. And I don't think I've ever really seen them show anything like that before. So that was definitely very nice.
Okay, that's good. And would you want to round us out with The Magicians, Pam?
Yeah, so The Magicians has been around for a while. It's on Sci-Fi. It's based off of Lev Grossman's series. I just started watching it because I need some other summer shows to kind of round everything else out. And it's really good. And 3 episodes so far, I can totally see why people compare it to Harry Potter. It is very much, in a sense, an adult Harry Potter with these young adults, because the main guy in it thinks he's going for an interview to get into grad school. It turns out that this magic school, this secret magic school, has chosen him to interview to go to their magic school. So it kind of like springs off from that point. There's kind of like a Voldemort type character. But other than that, it really kind of it's like there are some similarities, but it is very different. And I'm definitely enjoying it so far. It's a little dark. It's a little fantasy. And it's, yeah. It's right up my alley. So if you guys haven't checked that out and you're looking for something to watch, the full first season is out. So you'll have something nice to binge.
Cool. So those were some good recommendations. That was really nice. So we have 2 relatively long emails that we want to read out. So Merrima and Pam, if you want to get those.
Sure. This first email comes from Kathleen, who says, "Hi, everyone. After hearing Selena's Buffy cosplay story, it reminded me of my own silly story of my mom supporting me and then feeling guilty after. When I was maybe 9 or 10, I was watching an NSYNC live special on TV, and during the song I Want You Back, they do the cool 2-person flip where one person basically pulls the other's arms through their legs to make them do a forward flip. I begged and somehow convinced my mom to help me do the flip. I should note I wasn't in dance or gymnastics class, so it's not like I had ever done any fancy dance tricks. Needless to say, she pulled my arms through my legs, and instead of flipping and landing on my feet, I smashed my face on the hardwood floor. My mom felt so guilty, and she still hates it when I bring it up now. Also, an embarrassing cosplay story. I dressed up as Hermione, robes, tie, crimped hair, for my grade 7 Halloween dance. It was my first dance, and I thought it would be just like all the Halloween dances I'd seen on TV where everyone is in full costumes. Also, this is like your Mean Girls moment. Aww. It wasn't. No one was dressed up at all except the special education class. I was pretty embarrassed. Aww. Anyways, thanks for all your hard work. I work from home, so I listen to you guys as I work, and it helps feel less like I've been alone all day. Well, thanks, Kathleen. Those are 2 great stories. I'm sorry about your mom's everlasting guilt, but hey, at least you can always hold that over her. So that's fun. And yeah, that's the Hermione thing is funny. Sorry. I'm sure you can look back and laugh now.
Yeah, I know exactly which flip she's talking about, because I was a huge NSYNC fan, and my brother and I used to do this all the time until he too had a terrible accident, and then we were forbidden.
How many broken noses do you think NSYNC is responsible?
He kind of just like, well, actually it was he fell on my wrist. And so we actually both ended up getting a little hurt over that. But yeah, damn Disney specials. They're not as safe as you would think.
Who knew it was such an extreme sport?
Yeah. All I wanted to do was learn some sick NSYNC dance moves, and it backfired. All right. Well, we have one more email from Melissa Miller, who says, "I was wondering if anyone had any thoughts on The Legend of Tarzan. I didn't have the highest hopes for this movie, but I'm a sucker for stories that comment on the animal versus human nature comparison. Though this movie touched on that a bit, I ended up completely distracted by something else entirely. In an attempt to make the film compelling for a modern audience, they tried to ground it in an accurate point in history and add characters based on real people. Unfortunately, doing this only reminded us of how antiquated the story is in terms of perspective. Tarzan was originally written by an American for a Western audience in 1912, a very different era. I get that, but for David Gates and the writers of this movie not to modernize it is in the most critical and logical way, racially, that was a huge miss in my opinion. I think Tarzan has been told enough times not to take some chances on making changes that feel more realistic to the story. Watching hundreds of faceless black tribesmen cheer on their white savior was the most uncomfortable movie theater experience that I never saw coming. I think most of us just grew up with the animated version, a very pleasant story which provides zero accurate representation and effectively doesn't get you thinking, which is probably even worse, but I digress. Say we ignore the fact that Tarzan is white. It's an interesting story. This British baby ends up in the African Congo. Okay, but what about Jane? Here's Tarzan, who, in an extremely racially divided time, grew up in an environment where he isn't constrained by any of its social expectations. He doesn't understand or even know they exist, and he just happens to meet and fall in love with the one white girl who happens to be living with this tribe near where he lives. Facepalm. I realize Legend of Tarzan isn't intended to be the most deeply socially conscious movie in the world. It's a whimsical summer action flick, but I've come to the conclusion that the story as it is does not work today. Even though we have a black lead in this movie in Sam Jackson, he plays an American, even he is just used as the comic relief in most scenes. Of all the African people we meet, not one of them is fleshed out as a character. There are two who almost do, but both fall hopelessly short. On a side note, Alexander Skarsgård, who plays Tarzan, plays Tarzan exactly as he played Eric on True Blood. It was very funny and completely unexpected. I was waiting for his fangs to come out the entire movie. Sorry for the essay. I just had something to say. I'm sure I speak for everybody when we say we really appreciate this, because these are the kinds of conversations we want to have on the show. So we love that you wrote in about this.
Yeah.
Has anyone seen Tarzan?
Not yet.
Oh.
Probably not gonna.
Yeah. I'm not gonna, but I want to say thank you to Melissa for writing this, because, yeah, the history, like, faux history revisionist aspect of this makes me pretty uncomfortable, and I think it's a pretty, like, irresponsible choice on the part of the filmmakers for all of the reasons that you have articulated in a much better way than I will. So, yes, thank you so much for writing in. That was great.
Yeah, this was really good. No, I'm not seeing anything but Ghostbusters for the next month.
So. Every day.
You're not going to see Star Trek? Come on.
Oh, I am. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
But Ghostbusters first.
Yeah, I mean, guys, Ghostbusters come out here, like, August 8th, so I can't even help.
I get to see it tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Selena, you're going to America, like, next week.
I know. All of these movies will be out there. Do you think I have time? Do you think I have time to, like, go watch Ghostbusters? Yeah. I'm like... Sorry, Comic-Con.
Selena to Ghostbusters.
we'll find a way.
That's a possibility.
And play Pokemon Go on your phone, for God's sake.
I am offered, but apparently Selena thinks I'm not a good sharer.
Oh. No, I will not go to Comic-Con at all, basically, in America. I have too much else to do. So rounding off now with some tweets. Kristen, do you want to just run through these ones?
Sure. Our first one comes from the Lady Ash, and she says, I may have a new hobby, and sent us a picture, which I did not look at, but it's apparently Gilmore Girls with Pokemon.
It's basically, she puts, like, Pokemon on top of Gilmore Girls. And I have to say, Lady Ash, I totally got spoiled by one of those pictures, so...
Wait,
really,
I have to look at it.
Wait,
I'm looking now. I know, me
They're
too.
Really cute. I know, I'm looking now, too. I mean, it's really cute. It's
hilarious. I see. Sorry, Selena.
Oh, yeah.
Minor spoiler.
Mine. The pictures were very funny. So,
they're
yeah.
cute.
Okay.
The second comes from KSC at K-Wright, and she says, still hoping for a Hypeable Hype Unreal TV special.
Yes.
When the season's done.
Yes.
Gotta wait for the season to be finished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds good. It's in the works. We're working on it. And our last one comes from Shelly at SHLLYBKWRM, Shelly Bookworm, cute. She says, did you guys know the hashtag Keep the Secrets campaign was borrowed from the play The Mouse Trap? Just saw it recently. I had no idea. I
did not. Do they have a lot of secrets in The Mouse Trap?
Oh, I did know this. Well, it's not called the Keep the Secrets thing, but, like, The Mousetrap is a murder mystery play by Agatha Christie, and at the end of it, when you see it, because it's been running for, like, I don't know, like 50 years or something, when you get to the end of it, they ask you not to reveal who the murderer was, because you know, that makes sense, because it's a murder mystery.
And it worked, because I have no idea.
Right, and actually, it worked until, actually, it was really recently, I remember reading about it, Hypeable was like, here's the murderer and all their Hogwarts houses. The Wikipedia published, like, put on their summary of it, put the murderer in the thing, and the family of Agatha Christie, like, asked them to remove it, and the play producers asked them to remove it, and they were like, well, it's open source, so, like, people can put what they want. But the key difference of this, of course, being that The Mousetrap is entirely based on you not knowing who the murderer is. So that's kind of like, it's not like you can't tell people that you saw a murder mystery play. You just can't tell them who the murderer is. So, yeah. But good spotting.
Yeah.
I think you like The Mousetrap. It's really fun.
But who is the murderer? Tell me.
I want the secrets.
The secret. Just the one secret that you can't tell people. The answer, which I feel like is the difference. But anyways.
So this wraps up our show for today. It's been a lot of fun. Now, of course, we touched on Ghostbusters earlier. If you do want to go and see Ghostbusters when it opens this weekend, then we highly recommend that. It should be a lot of fun. It's getting really good reviews, aside from Andrew's misleading headline on Hypable.
I think I've not been sponsored to say this by Sony.
Oh, damn it, you found me out.
My
buckets of Ecto Goo are like
ectoplasm. Because Sony has a really big a really good track record of good reviews for their films, so obviously this is the thing that they do.
That argument is the worst. People are stupid. Ghostbusters is awesome. Just go see it. Don't be mad that something is being redone, because everything is being redone. Like, there's literally, go be mad about 21 Jump Street. Like,
I think my favorite Ghostbusters tweet of the week, and there's been a lot of gems, was someone who was like, oh wow, I can't wait to see how mad all those guys are going to be. Like, the ones who are mad about Ghostbusters when they find out they're making Spider-Man for the third time. And I was like, ah, lol.
Perfect. And you win the internet. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, I was like, that's my fave.
Right. And so not only is Ghostbusters coming out, but next week most of us are going to be at Comic-Con. So that means probably a lot of cool stories to tell, hopefully. But it also means that there probably won't be a show next week unless Merrima puts on a one-woman. This is your chance, Merrima.
My one-woman show?
Rant show, yeah.
Look, if there's enough, if there are enough requests for the one-woman rant show, I would totally do that. Watch how no one tweets us for the next week.
She's like, complete silence.
Our Instagram will be inundated with comments.
Yes. So anyway, we'll let you guys know on Twitter, which is obviously at HypableHype, what we end up doing, and you can keep up with us. We'll try to Instagram some stuff. We'll try to put some stuff on Tumblr. We'll try to keep you guys involved and let you know what's happening. And we will definitely be back in 2 weeks with another episode of Hype, so definitely stay tuned for that. And until next week, you can find us on hypable.com, which is hypable.com. You can email us, hype@hypable.com, and you can find us on Tumblr, hypepodcast.tumblr.com. Thanks for listening, everyone. My name is Lena.
My name is Pamela.
I'm Kristen.
My name is Lena.
My name is Pamela.
Bye.
Bye.
Is that it?
I guess.
Kristen and Merrima are having a stare down about who can say
their name. Like, Kristen, Merrima always does the last one.
Well, yeah. No, I refuse to say it. Because Kristen disappeared.
Oh, maybe she did. Maybe that's why you're like having a stare down with nobody.
I forgot to unmute. I was yelling at you all just now, and I forgot to unmute. So,
oh my god!
And I was like, "Why aren't they listening to me?" And
I was like, "Kristen,
oh,
is not that passive aggressive. That's definitely the move that I'm."
Kristen, I'm glad you came back, because if you hadn't, we would have been here until the next show, until Merrima.
That's right. We all would have missed our time of departure for Comic-Con. We just would have been here.
It's been bad news. I totally said my name, but I was muted and forgot to unmute. So I'm Kristen.
And I'm Merrima. Oh, yay.
Yeah, we're free.
84 years later.
Yeah, the people don't know, Selena just cut out an hour of silence.
Basically. We've been waiting for Kristen for years.
Technology's hard.
And I'm not a nice person.
I love this show. It's my fave.
Yay.
Good times.
Oh my god. Okay.